Spanish Ministry of Industry.
Good morning. My name is Bo Martinsson from Sweden, the National Post and Telecom Agency, which is the regulator.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Maria Hall, and I'm working for the Ministry of Enterprise, Energy and Communication. I'm a Deputy Director for the Division of IT Policy.
Good morning. I'm Jayanta Fernando, Director and Legal Advisor of the ICT Policy Agency for Sri Lanka.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Ali Said Mdahoma. I'm the Secretary General of the Ministry of ICT of Comoros. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Adedeji Adebayo from Nigeria, Office of the Presidency.
My name is Bukun Odushote. Good morning. I'm Permanent Secretary from the Presidency in Nigeria.
Good morning. My name is Ram Mohan. I'm with the ICANN board.
Morning. My name is Vandes Cartesini. I'm from Brazil. I'm a liaison to the board of ALAC.
Good morning. I'm Jean-Jacques Subrenard from France, a member of the board of ICANN and a member of the joint working group between board and GAC.
Jan Skarklins. I'm from Latvia. I'm Latin ambassador to France. Happen to be also chair of the GAC.
Ray Polzak, member of the ICANN board and co-chair of this committee.
Good morning. Heather Dryden, co-chair from the GAC side and Canadian GAC representative.
Good morning. I'm Elham Omidvari from Iran, regulatory of Iran.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Ansari from Iran, information technology company.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Hadi Malik Barast, General Manager of R&D Information Technology of Iran.
Good morning. My name is Bertrand de la Chapelle. I'm the Special Envoy for the Information Society in the French Foreign Affairs Ministry.
Hello, everyone. I'm Trish Abejo, representing the Philippine Commission on ICT.
My name is Jakob Juhl. I'm coming from Denmark, representing the National IT and Telecoms Agency. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. It's Peter Nettlefold from Australia, representing the Department of Broadband and Communications. GAC representative.
Good morning. I'm Cui Shutian from China, Ministry of Industry and Information Technology.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Hugo Chertner from the German Ministry of Economics and Technology. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I am Jan van Nieuwenhuis, Belgium. I work for the Belgian Institute for Postal Services and Telecommunications.
Good morning. My name is Erno Stoll from Norway, from the Norwegian Post and Telecom Authority.
Good morning. My name is Aslo Hagestad-Mag, also from Norwegian Post and Telecommunication Authority, Director of Internet and Security.
Good morning, everybody. Thomas De Haan from the Dutch Ministry of Economic Affairs, representing Netherlands. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tony Tan. I'm from Ministry of Transportation and Communication, Taiwan.
Good morning. My name is Xu Zhen Mao. I'm from Taiwan and from the government center. Thank you.
So thank you. Do we have others who are from other countries? Please introduce yourself. Or not at the table.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dwi. I'm representative from Ministry of Communication and Information Technology of Indonesia.
Welcome. I think if you would be so kind to come to take a seat at the table, that would be very good and useful. So I know that we have also a representative of WIPO. I talked to him before. Here it is. Brian Beckham from WIPO. So, and I see our Swiss colleagues are coming in. And remotely we have Suzanne Sen from United States and GAC representative from Japan following the meeting. Today, this morning, we will have a joint session with the board, and in the afternoon, we will have a session on new GTLDs. Taking into account that staff is invited to the board workshop to present, to make a presentation on new GTLDs, we were talking that maybe if we want to benefit from staff presentation of the new documents which have been posted before this meeting, that Kurt Pritz could come to the GAC at maybe 1:30. If we would start our afternoon session not at 2 but at 1:30 with the staff presentation on the new documentation which has been posted, that would be, we could benefit from that half an hour presentation. If that's acceptable, then I'm turning microphone to Heather and Ray, two co-chairs of the morning session.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming this morning to participate in the joint working group on the review of the role of the GAC. We have another version that's been circulated, which is a proposed version 2 of the report, and this integrates comments that were made by France on the teleconference and comments that he had circulated, that France had circulated to the joint working group list. There are also bits and pieces that have been added from other objectives outlined in the report. And so this morning we will invite those that had offered to draft text to give us an update and hopefully generate discussion on those items. And I will turn over to Ray, who will give us an agenda for today of sorts. What issues we are going to tackle in what order, and what we are seeking to do for each of those this morning.
Good morning. Instead of following the outline of the report and discussing each objective in turn, what we're going to try to do today is focus on some particular aspects and areas in those objectives. And to that end, we hope to begin with the presentation by the U.S. Regarding liaisons that the U.S. has volunteered to provide text in that area. Then we will move on to a discussion of the travel portion of the objective where the GAC is to be receiving travel support from ICANN, and then a discussion of the Secretariat. The last two items that I just mentioned, there will be papers for them. They are being printed right now, and as soon as they are available, they will be distributed to the members. After the discussion of the Secretariat, we will then be taking a 15-minute break. Each of those three topics this morning, we are planning on allotting approximately 30 minutes per topic. Then following the break, somewhere here. That's 30 minutes approximately. Some of them may be shorter, some of them may be a little longer, but the idea is that before the break, we will have completed those three topics. Then following the break, we are going to try and bring focus into the areas of advice to the board and relationships with the community and the PDP. And as members are all aware, this is a this particular area does need for us to come to some focus on it so we can actually come up with some really concrete recommendations as we finalize our report. So are there any questions on that agenda? Okay. So do you want to invite Suzanne or do you want me to do it? So I'll give, okay. Suzanne, are you there?
Yes, I am, Ray.
Can you go ahead and then proceed?
I'd be happy to, but I think I may have to offer apologies because, Heather, I'm not entirely sure. I have version 2, so I'm not entirely sure that my rough draft is part of that.
No. The version that was circulated it in hard copy this morning, I'm not sure that it was circulated to the joint. It wasn't. Okay. I can see someone shaking their head. Okay, so there is some text in the current version of the report. That was text proposed by France, but there is not a contribution there from the United States. So if you're comfortable with giving us an update and outlining main points there, then we can proceed on that basis. Also, I will ask Max to please circulate the version to the joint working group. My apologies for that oversight. So, Suzanne, would that be okay?
Sure, absolutely, and thank you. And apologies to the group for not seeing my rough draft. I can certainly walk people through what I had attempted to do and had been sent at the present time solely to other liaisons to get their views. And thank you to Stefano, who I don't believe is in the room, but he did respond to my email. So I was holding off until today's discussions to then update that draft. But what I attempted to do was to combine objectives 2 and 3 regarding all of the liaisons that the GAC has. So the first two are fairly significant. We have a GAC liaison to the ICANN board, which is, of course, the GAC chair. And the second had been the GAC liaison to the nominating committee. And at a certain point in time, and I'm not entirely sure I remember, I believe it was until 2007, Jayantha is in the room, so he can help correct me if I make any mistakes here. We did have a liaison to the nominating committee and then determined that there were some challenges presented to that particular liaison due to the work procedures of that committee for confidentiality and the need to hold the information proprietary. So it created a bit of a challenge, and the GAC withdrew its liaison at that time and probably needs to revisit it. But why don't I lay out some of the questions that I think we might want to answer vis-a-vis these first two liaison functions. So this is objective 2, if I may. It has the liaison function effectively met the needs of the GAC. From a GAC perspective, vis-a-vis the liaison to the ICANN board, I believe we would all agree that the answer would be yes. We don't know what the board sense is. So the second question would be, has the liaison effectively met the needs of the board? The third question would be, what improvements, if any, should be considered that might improve the effectiveness of the GAC liaison to the board? So this is an outstanding question, pending additional input from the GAC chair, GAC members, and of course, our board colleagues, so that we could write up a little overview as to where we think we all are at the present time and whether we think there might be some changes that we could all consider as a group and advance as proposals for consideration. So if I may, that takes care of the GAC chair. On the GAC liaison to the nominating committee, due to some of the complications of that particular role and complications on the GAC side, I think we all know from our perspective it's a rather delicate situation to have a single government try to represent, it's an imposition on them, if you will, to try to represent the views of every other government when we don't have a good means to do so, particularly with the constraints imposed on that particular liaison. So the question there would be, what is the purpose of this particular GAC liaison from the perspective of the GAC on the one side and the ICANN board on the other? Does this liaison function need to be reconsidered? Can the purpose and scope of the GAC liaison to the NOMCOM be restructured to permit this liaison to represent the broader views of the GAC? And if not, should the bylaws be amended to delete the reference to the GAC liaison to the NOMCOM? So should I pause here and see if anybody has any questions on these two particular liaison functions?
Thank you, Suzanne. Does anyone have any comments or questions on what Suzanne has described thus far? No. Okay, Suzanne, would you like to continue?
Sure. Thank you. So the other liaisons covered in Objective 3 in our report from Seoul are the liaisons to other SOs and ACs. So the bylaws provide that the GAC may designate a non-voting liaison to each supporting organization and advisory committee. So in terms of history and practice, the functions and experience of GAC liaisons to the other SOs and ACs have varied widely over time, and also in relation to specific supporting organizations and ACs. In the case of the RSAC and the ESAC, there have been long-time GAC liaisons from the Netherlands and Italy, respectively. Although there have been GAC liaisons to the CCNSO, to my recollection, it was Mexico and followed by the UK, but more recently we haven't had one. We've also had a liaison to the GNSO that I have actually served that function, but we don't have that currently. And then we had a short-lived effort to create a regional liaisons to correspond to the regional membership of the ASO. So right now at the present time, we have no formal or perhaps even informal liaisons to the CCNSO, the GNSO, the ASO, and the ALAC. What I would have proposed to Heather, based on my experience as a GAC liaison to the GNSO, was to do a short write-up, if my colleagues would find that helpful, as to my experience and what I thought some of the challenges were and some of the misperceptions. And I would invite others, if they would wish to share their views. But here are a few of the questions that I think we might want to contemplate. Is there a shared or common understanding within the GAC and between the GAC and the SOs and ACs of the purpose and the role of the GAC liaisons to the supporting organizations and advisory committees? If so, should this role be explicitly reflected in the GAC operating principles? Because it actually currently is not. If not, should a consensus position be developed and reflected in the GAC operating principles and in discussions between the GAC and the SOs and the ACs? And, of course, if that were to happen, we would want it to be reflected in the Joint GAC Board Working Group, so we would welcome the Board's views on this. And can the effectiveness of these liaison mechanisms be assessed absent a common understanding? So this actual, this particular area of research may involve some feedback from the SOs and ACs themselves. So I put that out there to get other people's views as to how best to proceed.
Thank you very much, Suzanne. You've given us, I think, some useful questions to consider. What I propose now is that if JWG members have comments or questions on any of the liaisons that have been identified, and in particular, for those of you that have served in a liaison role, I think it would be particularly useful to hear about your experiences or what kinds of things you think that this working group needs to consider regarding liaisons. I see Stefano. Thank you. Please.
As Susan mentioned, together with Thomas Dehaan, we have been serving the liaison function both for the SAC and the RSAC. And the experience has been very positive for what concerned the SAC, because we organized many meetings, joint meetings, and we had a lot of encounters during the plenary of the GAC. With the route survey system, this is kind of less evident, less that has a less evident role. I can say that because the route surveys are conducted in a confidential manner, not completely transparent. They are very important, of course, and we will know in this meeting. But a real interaction of from myself and from Thomas was not with this group, but the fact is that the Security and Stability Group actually is dealing a lot of questions concerning also the route service system. Recently, I have been adopted by the Security and Stability Committee, so I have double hat. and I find this an evolution that I accepted with the permission of the GAC chair, because I asked him if this is something that is a good move or not. And I think that the function of the liaisons should be not too formal, let's say, because the liaison should report to the plenary not every time, but when there are some good news. And if this is the role that is played, I would like to encourage also that with the CCNSO and the GNSO, there are liaisons. I think this is positive. And I served also in the NOMCOM in 2005. And this was a good experience, but in this case, as it was mentioned, the positive side I see is that the NOMCOM members appreciate to have a feeling of a GAC member with some experience, and actually this is only, let's say, transferring some vision of what could be and good candidates for the different fora where the candidates are elected, but nothing more than that. So in the end, for me, it was a good experience, and I think that the others appreciated my presence there. But we are non-voting members, so only advice of this type. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stefano. I have Jayantha next, and Vanda, and then I have the Netherlands.
Thank you. Heda? Can I go ahead? Thank you, Susan, for the initial draft you have provided. And for the interpretation you have given with regard to the role of the liaison to the nominating committee, I think I would also begin by concurring with Stefano to the extent that being in the nominating committee was a very good experience, and the nominating committee members, and I see a former chair, George Sadowski, in the room, they, I think, all appreciate the presence of GAC. Person may not be a representative in the proper sense of the word as coined by Susan here, but somebody from the GAC giving some input to the process is very much appreciated by the nominating committee. My personal view is that having been involved in that process for some time, it is a very very interesting and a very useful area for the GAC to be engaged in. I'm not too sure how the entirety of the GAC would look at it in its entirety, because I understand that there are concerns with regard to the confidentiality levels that have to be maintained. But I must emphasize one thing, and that is, number one, is that the confidentiality required to be maintained by the nominating committee members is in respect of ensuring that the names of the candidates are not disclosed, so that the candidates who apply have some safety and guarantee that their names will not be thrown out in the open. Secondly, the process by itself is well known, because the outcome of the nominating committee process is that there is always a report that is published. And I think some of the concerns amongst many of the GAC members arose because this report was not widely circulated. And during my time, both in 2006, of course, 2006, I think there was some concern and Brazil is also here. So it's very interesting. And although my final position will be that although we may not necessarily have the term Suzanne has worded very carefully and quite rightly, I would think, maybe that it should be reiterated that the GAC liaison to the non-com is not supposed to be representing the GAC. So if that can be sorted out in some way, the terminology needs to be sorted out, and I can see some views coming from many other members also. So if that can be sorted out, it is useful for the GAC to be involved, I believe, in this process in some form or the other. And that is the crux of the issue that needs to be sorted out, in which form and in what way. Thank you.
Thank you, Jayantha. I know that we did discuss the liaison to the NOMCOM to the point that the GAC did decide to not continue with keeping that liaison. And one of the difficulties was, in fact, that it's meant to be a confidential committee, and so it presented some difficulties, as Suzanne has described, with the representational role of the GAC to that body. But I wonder if those that have also participated in the NOMCOM, whether it's more a matter of wanting a certain kind of perspective or experience. You know, are there people that have worked in government maybe that would be useful on the NOMCOM, and not necessarily, you know, a GAC representative, something like that. Okay, so next I have Vanda, please.
Okay, thank you, Heather. Thank you, Suzanne, for the previous information. Being in the ALACS sometimes and in the GAC for many years in the board, so I do believe that GAC will have a lot of opportunity to share information with the ALAC, because we are organized in the regions and we have almost one group in each country in that regions. So to get together with the governors in those regions could be very important for the developing of policy in that region, and the way people think and the way people can have their positions addressed directly to the governments. So it's quite important, in my opinion, to have this connection. When the GAC starts back in the 99, we were very close. Nowadays, the GAC is quite open, and this was very important to know how to address things to the board, how to address policies inside the ALAC. So the presence of some people from the GAC will add a lot of value to the ALAC, and at the same time, the feedback from the regions talking in ALAC will, add value also to the GAC. So I believe it's at least with ALAC, it will be very, very positive joint working group. Thank you.
Thank you, Vanda, for giving us a perspective from the ALAC. For those that have dialed into the meeting, we've actually lost use of a significant amount of the microphones, so we're trying to fix the problem now.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Okay, so next in line we have the Netherlands, then we have Rom.
Thank you.
And then we have France, Norway, and then Latvia. Please.
Thank you, Heather. I just can sum up to the experience of Stefano and others that the way the liaison works, as it has worked in the last 5 years, is good because of the informality. We're not bound to positions. We have a free exchange of views. We have flexibility in the way we work together, and we trigger, let's say, meetings to have. If there's something pop ups, we gather a meeting or a briefing or something. I think two things which I think should be considered as an improvement. First of all, we have to consider that, for example, in my case, we are all volunteers, and although I state yes. As a liaison function on the website, I have been away 2 years from ICANN. So, basically, the root server advisory committee liaison function was basically dormant. I have not had chance to do anything. So here you see the fact that although people start with good intentions and they start up very well, then they got called away or something else happens, and something disappears. So one of the things we could imagine is that we we do really put a term on a liaison, and we renew it every, or we look at the renewal every 2 years, probably, to look if it's still a valid position for that person. And maybe somebody else can step in. The second point is that because of being volunteers, we face just a lack of resources and time to effectively, let's say, do our work. So maybe that's more something for the resources and, let's say, the secretarial support part of it. But I think if we have also a kind of support mechanism for the liaisons to work, it would much more make the life of the liaisons easier, and also probably volunteers will easier stepping up to do this if they know it will not be a very hard job to do. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue, I have Rom, and I inadvertently took out my co-chair from the queue, so Ray will comment after Rom. Please go ahead, Rom.
I'm sorry, Heather, could I join the queue as well?
Yes.
Thank you, Heather. A couple of comments. The first is that, in my opinion, the liaison role is not a message-passing role. You know, when liaisons from the GAC come into various committees, I think it is useful to have the GAC's own perspectives and questions be raised into the committees that these liaisons participate in a structured manner. I don't think that happens on a consistent basis right now. I think that would be extraordinarily useful. And perhaps that's the kind of work that the GAC itself considers during its consultations on a regular basis. Let me speak specifically to my experiences with the ESSAC as well as with the NOMCOM. Now, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee expects that all its members and participants to be appropriately qualified. And what that really means is that it needs people who can stay current and are able to follow the detailed technical conversations that occur in the committee. In Stefano's case, that has not been a problem at all. In fact, Stefano has been an extraordinarily positive influence as the GAC liaison into the ESSAC, providing both useful counsel as well as giving insightful directions regarding the GAC's own perspectives on things. You know, for example, when the ESSAC sits and talks about protecting end users or registrants in a particular area, for example, who is privacy, the kind of input that Stefano brings in is extraordinarily useful and is not available from other normal sources, for instance, from the CC or the GNSO areas. So that kind of input ought to be encouraged and should have more of it. NOMCOM, I think, is a little bit of a trickier topic, primarily because NOMCOM, A, expects each member to act in their individual capacity and not in a true liaison capacity. And second, because of the political sensitivities and the feelings that are associated with distinguished individuals who apply for roles in as office bearers in ICANN, the cost of exposing a lot of those functions directly in the open has to get balanced with the transparency requirements or impulses that we have. And in general, the NOMCOM has tended to go towards making sure that the privacy as well as the preserving the feelings and saving the face of those candidates who are very qualified but yet do not make the cut. You know, when you look at the average NOMCOM, there are 70 to 80 folks at least who come in and apply for a net of
10 or 15 actual roles. Now, the individuals who are actually applying in almost across the board are individuals of very high capacity who are captains of industry, who are, you know, people who have accomplished a great deal and are not accustomed to being turned down, are not accustomed to being told no. If they're going to be told no, they would much rather hear the no in private than have those procedures exposed in public. If there is a, when the NOMCOM deliberates and it has a set of criteria, there are some very hard things said about individuals inside the NOMCOM. And those hard things are said because there are very difficult choices and there's some level of back and forth that happens. And sometimes the NOMCOM makes a choice not because there is a... sometimes it makes a choice because there is a geographic requirement. And in the geographic requirement, you have to make decisions among a pool of candidates who comes in. So I think the GAC liaison into the NOMCOM, one of the things that GAC should consider is to continue to allow this liaison to participate in an individual capacity and to allow this level of confidentiality to remain, because I fear that otherwise the damage to the process of nominating really qualified people will be pretty high, and that will harm the community of ICANN overall. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rom. Next, I have Ray.
Thank you, Heather. Rom and I have this disgusting habit of thinking a lot alike on many things. We've done this for many years. I would like, first of all, to speak in my capacity as the vice chairman of the SSAC and echo what Rom has just said about Stefano's contributions to that committee. And also to echo what Stefano has said in terms of mutually thinking that this has been a very, very beneficial and effective liaison. Then speaking a little bit to the NOMCOM, the persons on the NOMCOM are not representative. It's better to look at them, as Rom has said, is that they are private individuals, but what is being sought here is a diversity of members of the NOMCOM. And so we look at diversity from many different aspects, and there's always the obvious ones, geographical or economic or gender and so forth. But ICANN also has the ability to present a diversity based upon the group or the interest that is represented by that individual. So I would echo what Rama is saying, is the fact that this person has got to function as a private individual. He's bringing the this person is bringing the government's experience, if you will, to the table and perspectives. I can speak a little bit to that as well. In my former role as the CEO of ARIN, we had members of governments of U.S. and Canada participating in a policy process there, and they never spoke for their particular governments or their particular agencies. What they did do is they brought in the perspective of the agency or the government as a whole that to this policy forum, so that as the deliberations were going on, people were aware of what that perspective was. And so that is really what has to be the case with the NOMCOM. It's a perspective that's being brought in here. It's not a report-carrying, message-bearing type of a thing. It's a perspective, and it's a very valuable perspective, because remember that the NOMCOM is selecting people as to be officers of some sort in ICANN. You want board members selected who are going to be capable of looking across the entire ICANN spectrum. And so when candidates are qualities of candidates are being looked at, the ability of one person there to bring in a perspective of what governments look at in terms of a board member is very, very important. So and the last thing I would like to say in this regard is that as we go through and look at these various liaisons, there has to be, I think, a set of expectations that may or may not be the same for each of the liaisons. In other words, and that expectation has got to be basically negotiated by both sides. What does each side of this liaison arrangement expect to happen? In some cases, it may be that all we desire is a simple exchange of messages. In other cases, it may be a more active participation. For example, Giannis, as the liaison to the board, is a very active participant in board discussions. So there's that, I think, also has to be taken into consideration. We've been talking a little bit here about the non-com person. That's a different expectation. So I think that as we go through and look at these dormant and not successful liaisons, that we go back and say, take a real hard look, you know, what is it that really caused them to fail? Was there some expectation or perspective that was not looked at the time that that liaison was done? Did we just take the broad brush and say, boom, we have an idea what a liaison should do, and that's it? So I would take that back to the members as well.
Thank you very much, Ray. I might just add that from the perspective of the Canadian government, it's really difficult to take off the government hat, so to speak. So, and this is what I'm hearing, I think, from my GAC colleagues, is that this is really the difficulty when putting liaisons onto various supporting organizations and advisory committees and so on. So I'd actually welcome comments from GAC colleagues on that particular point. In the speaking order, I now have France, Norway, Latvia, then the U.S., and then I will look to closing the list in the next few minutes. Okay.
Heather, can you hear me? It's Bill D here from the European Commission.
Yes, Bill, please, go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Just to add me to the list, please.
Oh,
thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. A few quick points. First of all, to support what actually Jayanta was saying, liaisons are not about representing the whole GAC. And in this respect, Suzanne is right to raise the question, but the answer is no liaison is there to represent the GAC as a whole. Of course, if there is a position that the GAC has adopted, it's all the better if the liaison can share it, but this is not the fundamental function. The second thing is, both in Wanda's, Ram, and Ray, there's a word that has come back again and again, which is the word perspective. I think it is the core element. The key function of those liaisons is, in a large respect, the capacity to identify and detect very early on the public policy dimensions of issues that are being addressed. It is mutually beneficial because there are many cases where the GNSO, for instance, and this, of course, doesn't apply for the NAMCOM, I'll come to that later, the GNSO is raising an issue, and it is only after a certain number of iterations that it actually comes to the GAC, and the GAC says, but how didn't you see that there was a public policy dimension here? And it's bad for the GNSO as well, because then it flips the problem and prevents it from being addressed correctly. Likewise, on the other hand, it's always a problem for GAC members because of the delays in the internal consultations at the national level. The later we are aware, collectively, of the existence of a potential public policy issue, the harder it is to contribute rapidly. So this is the notion of providing early on detection and mutual information. So it's not message passing. The third point is about confidentiality. It is a delicate thing. However, the GAC liaison to the board is involved in highly confidential discussions, and it doesn't cause any problem. It is part of the function. So the fact that the chairman is participating in the GAC in the board discussions shows that a GAC liaison can participate in something that is confidential. The last point is about the notion of basically volunteers or the participation in a personal capacity. I don't have a solution here, but it is true that among GAC members there is a very big diversity of national mandates. Some have participation in this as a major part of their own job description. Others have it only as a completely side effect, and it does have an impact on whether there's a participation and how much they can involve themselves. Final point on the NOMCOM, I would fully support what Ray and Ram were saying. Provided that the confidentiality can be protected, it is incredibly useful, I think, that the perspective of the public policy or the public interest is taking into account in the NOMCOM discussion, which, of course, no voting right, because that's not the purpose of a liaison. But bringing the perspective in the discussion is the purpose of a liaison. Thank you.
Thank you, France. Norway, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, and thanks all for your input into these issues. And thanks, Suzanne, for, I think you pointed out to the key issues here, what you said. It's the purpose and the role for the liaisons must be defined. I would also think that if we should have liaisons, their purpose and their role should be defined in the operating principles, so that we in the GAC and the other constituencies will have a common understanding of what they should do. For what other representatives have given of input is very useful, because then, of course, that highlights the usefulness of liaisons. So that's certainly a good input into this discussion. What I think Ron was also mentioning is about the input-output. I think we have to define what GAC liaison should then be inputting into the entity it's liaison to, and what's the output from the liaison to the GAC. That must also be defined to be able to understand the role. And also regarding the representation, because that's defined, must be defined into the role of the liaison. Several were mentioning the perspective. Of course, you could have a GAC liaison, but of course, that could also be accomplished by having a government liaison or a government participation. So of course, that's also something we in the GAC must discuss, is if it's useful for the GAC to have a liaison, or is it useful for have a government representative as a member or a liaison from that country. Regarding what you said, Heather, the representation role, representation from your country or from just a government or from the GAC. That's important issues to define and to establish. Thanks. I think this, and of course the purpose of this is to get all the input and then use this to define sort of the way forward afterwards. So, yes, thank you.
Thank you, Norway. Useful suggestion to advance our work. Next, I have Latvia, the United States, and then the European Commission, which would be the final speaker on this agenda item. So please, Latvia.
Thank you, Heather. What I hear is a positive evaluation of need of GAC liaisons to different organizations, and I think that we have to maybe revisit our position, which we took a couple of years ago, to seize this function. But what I see that the underlying reason of our decision is still present, and that is a difference in perception of the role of the liaison. The main thing is that outside the GAC, the perception is that GAC liaison speaks on behalf of the GAC. And inside the GAC, we are very cognizant that liaison cannot speak on behalf of the GAC unless there is a common GAC position. and which is expressed whether in communique or in any other documentation we're producing. So if we would be able to harmonize this perception that GAC liaisons to the organizations and committees are not speaking on behalf of the GAC, unless they are explicit about that, then I think we are we can reinstate liaisons. And in fact, this is my practice also on the board. When I'm speaking on behalf of the GAC, I explicitly saying that I'm speaking on behalf of the GAC and expressing GAC's official position, or I'm saying that I'm speaking in my personal capacity, and that's very clear. I agree with Thomas's point that liaisonship is time-consuming. To tell, for me, it takes about 3 weeks, a year, to work as a liaison, GAC liaison to the board, taking into account all board activities which are outside meetings. So, periodical evaluation, if we reinstate liaisons, periodical evaluation the work would be very useful, and I agree that sometimes people simply get tired and need to be replaced, and this is nothing pejorative, but that's just a fact of life. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Latvia. Okay, Suzanne, please.
Thank you very much. Actually, Yanis actually covered quite a few of the points that I was going to raise. I think it is that was certainly my experience as the GAC liaison to the GNSO, which is why at a certain point we had to terminate, because there was this perception that I could represent the GAC on a regular basis and that I could actually begin to serve as a volunteer on several of their working groups. And this goes to Thomas's point as well about resources and the fact that we are all volunteers. So if I recall back in history, at the time when I began the liaison function, we and the GNSO were not speaking as regularly as we do now. So a certain element of that function was simply to serve as an information conduit and to help structure agendas for exchanges. In fact, we started exchanging, I guess, views on who is. I believe that was a very pressing issue. And both sides recognized that there were public policy concerns, and so we decided it would be useful to have more regular exchanges. But it wasn't necessarily linked to a policy development process per se. So I think it's useful for us to try to categorize the purpose and the function of liaisons, which may be very different for different SOs and ACs. Vis-a-vis our GAC chair, as Yanis points out, I think all of us have an enormous amount of confidence that when we've done a communique or a formal letter or a formal, we have formally adopted a position, we have enormous confidence that that is, in fact, the position that the GAC chair is going to advance. When we don't, or even if we have, we are working on a position, if it is just an individual government's view, then it ends up being just an individual government's view. So there is that challenge that we face, and perhaps we need to put this out as a question to our counterparts in the other SOs and ACs so that we can arrive at a mutually agreed definition of the scope of each liaison function. I think Thomas's idea of a regular review is an excellent one, because we should rotate these functions should we decide to continue them. And I actually think there's a great deal of value in all of the liaison functions. But I think Ornulf put it very well as well. We need to understand what the input is and then what the output back to the GAC is, so that we can act upon it. So perhaps we're looking at a little more detailed discussion of the formality that we want to attach to this. And it may not need to be formal. It just may need to be a set of agreed procedures and guidelines for not only the GAC, but our counterparts. Thank you.
Thank you very much, United States. And lastly, I have the European Commission. Please go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Heather, and good morning, everyone. Firstly, my apologies for not being there with you in person in Nairobi, but the good news is that my colleagues are arriving tonight and will be able to join you in person tomorrow. Thank you. A very interesting discussion, actually. Just very, very briefly, I'd agree with everyone that it's very important that we have good quality interaction with the other advisory committees and supporting organizations. I think that's the cornerstone, really, of good policy making, multi-stakeholder policy making in ICANN. I note that in recent years, our main way of doing this, the main way of achieving this, has been by having joint meetings, such as this one. And I'd say that this is always the best way, actually, to get a full level of participation. As the first option is, we should be having as many joint meetings as we can, and I think we've been very successful in that. My own experience, not having been a liaison myself, but as a GAC member, is that liaisons have always been a problem. People have mentioned already that it's not possible for any individual member to represent the GAC, and I think that is important. I think perceptions are important, and we can do a lot to clarify it, but there's also a structural problem there, actually, that an individual GAC member can't always take off the government hat. I think this is the point you made, Heather, and I'd agree with you. I certainly can't. I participate in GAC meetings in official capacity, not in a personal capacity. And that does raise problems. NomCom in particular, I think, is a particular problem with specific confidentiality requirements. We have our own accountability. I have my accountability to my hierarchy and to the organization I work with. And personally, I can't be confidential in terms of reporting back to my bosses and my hierarchy. I also have a concern with the NomCom, actually, because of its specific role in appointing directors to a private corporation. I think that's of all of the liaison functions, that's the one I think that is problematic for some of us. My last point, actually, is more of a proposal, actually. I noticed reading through the bylaws that they provide for the GAC to provide quite a number of liaisons to other supporting organizations and advisory committees and indeed to the board. And I was surprised to see that there's no provision for any other organizations to provide liaisons to the GAC. And it seems to me that if that were the case, if other organizations provided liaisons to us rather than the current situation, that would actually solve a lot of problems for the GAC, a lot of the ones we've discussed this morning, and it would achieve, I think, the same contact point that we're looking for. So that's one idea I think would be worth considering. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Okay, so I think we've come to a conclusion for this agenda item. I will hand over the microphone shortly to Ray to cover the next item. What I should have mentioned at the beginning of the meeting is that this session is being recorded, and there will be a transcript made available of today's session, so we will have a record of today's discussions. Ray, please.
Thank you, Suzanne. We'd like now to move the discussion to one of the aspects of Objective 4. In short, from Objective 4, the ICANN board asks the group to consider measures to enhance support of the GAC's work and includes several things, and one of which is the extension of travel support for GAC members. It is my understanding there is an existing process that the GAC has used to gain some travel support from ICANN for fiscal year 2010. And so I would like to first of all ask Giannis if he could to provide a background information on this particular document.
Yes, certainly. We had On a number of occasions in past years, we witnessed that some GAC members, particularly from developing and least developed countries, could not attend the GAC meetings for economic reasons. And we felt that asking ICANN to provide travel support would be one of the ways how to increase awareness about issues ICANN is dealing and also provide some new perspective in the GAC discussions, because if we don't hear how things is perceived in developing countries, then that perspective is absent in our debate. So, that was the time when remote participation was not really on our agenda, and we never had anything similar like we have today. Remote participation was introduced about a year ago in our meetings. So we made a request to ICANN board, and ICANN board was positive, and we are now benefiting from the we're benefiting from travel support for six members. We worked out the methodology of allocation and selection of GAC members benefiting from this support. It was done on the basis of existing ICANN travel support policy document, which was modified and agreed in the GAC. I think it was about a year ago. And the selection committee for this purpose consists of the chair and the vice chairs, and they receive applications and make decisions on allocation. What are the principles? First of all, we think that it is useful to maintain travel support for the same GAC member for a certain period of time, because it takes a while until members start to understand what the issue is and what implications for his or her country is. So we have very short experience until now. It is the third time when we allocate this travel support. But I hope that in this discussion, those who benefit from travel support will be able to tell how they see it and how they feel about it.
Thank you, Yanis. Given the relatively limited experience with this current procedure, the first obvious question to ask is this sufficient to meet the desires of the GAC for travel support for members from least developed countries? Now, I note that in this document that the notion least developed countries was actually did not use the UN definition, but instead used three of the categories from the World Bank, being low income, lower middle, and upper middle income. Perhaps even the use of the term least developed may not be appropriate as we go forward, given the thought process here. I'm not sure. But the other thing, obviously, that one would ask is that, and not meaning and don't want to get into discussion of the processes involved in this as far as selection and everything else, but basically looking at the principles involved and the level of support. Some people would view it's a limitation that there's six people. However, that's probably also a budget reality. But I think this is also a moment to look at the fact is that consideration should that number of selectees be increased from six to some other number. And we don't have enough experience in this area to know how effective it's been to date to know whether or not even that would be a good question to pursue. So I would like to begin the conversations entertaining two types of inputs. One that Yanis referred to, the experiences that anyone has in terms of actually having participated in this. And then the second one is this current document as it is sufficient, or is there a need to broaden it in some way, shape, or form? And so with that, I will begin to entertain participation in interventions.
Spain.
Thank you.
Just a question. Perhaps it would be useful to know whether in the current experience there have been more applications than travel grounds. Because I've missed something, but I don't have that information in order to know whether it would be good to broaden the program or not. Thank you.
The question, as I understand it, is that you would like to know, based upon current experience, has there been more candidates forced that, in other words, someone was turned back? Can you answer that, please?
Yeah, we have, there are a couple of principles. One is that travel support is provided for one representative per country. We have been asked several times to provide travel support for two representatives from the same country, and we had to turn down this request. Otherwise, on one occasion, we had to turn down one application because of the lack of funding. Until now, on two occasions, we had the number of applications matching with the number of travel support, and once we had one member more, and regularly we have requests from one country for travel support for two people, so which is turned down.
Thank you. Real quick comment. That's something else that, in considering broadening this, is not only the number of countries you're selecting from, but the size of the delegation. Should it be one or two, for example? Something else that we could discuss as well. So anyone else, please? Oh.
Thank you.
This is Suzanne. Could I just ask a question?
Is that okay? Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I was just curious to know if there would be data, or would it be helpful to have data that would permit us to understand the level of support for the GAC travel relative to support provided to other ACs and SOs?
So, Suzanne, if I understand your question, would it be useful to have data to do that comparison? Anybody have any comments on that?
To compare.
In other words, how much travel support is extended to the various SOs is the question. Okay.
I can talk about it.
Okay.
We have Patricia first.
And then I also can comment on the ASO. So go ahead.
Thank you. On the part of the Philippines, we have benefited from this particular opportunity to participate physically in GAC meetings. We joined GAC in July of last year, and we were, least to say, excited and thrilled about this opportunity to participate in a travel support capacity. And it has benefited us to sort of see and understand what's going on within GAC and ICANN, and bring back to our government and to our constituents as to what are the relevant issues that need to be taken up on the part of the Philippines. So it has benefited us as to the extent that we didn't realize it would. So we would support its continuing provision for travel-eligible economies. But related to what Suzanne said, I think it would be appreciated by this body, and I'm not sure if I have the support of the other members as well, to know if such assistance is also available to SOs and ACs, because from what I know also, it is made available to other organizations within ICANN and not just to GAC, but it's relevant to us in terms of the number of countries that are made to avail of this particular facility. And to the extent that you want to encourage diversity, it's not clear as to what the selection process is. Are we saying in terms of governments that we want to participate in a geographic region or distribution, or the time that they have been with GAC, is that a consideration as well? You know, the level of participation is very important. So I'd like to start discussions in these areas as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Vonda, would you speak to the ALAC experience?
Yeah. Suzanne, it's Vonda from ALAC, liaison to the board. And what I know that the support of ALAC is in amount of money, it's almost, it's basic the same of the GAC. So I do believe that the way we do that is we have select people from each region, two of each region, and so the chair and the secretary of each region normally come to the meetings, plus the non-com members of ALAC, and that's it. So that is the support we have. We have also a kind of per diem to because we don't have food or those kind of things supported inside the meetings. So they pay for each one some kind of per diem. Is I don't remember because I don't get it. I don't get it. But it's enough for the transport and for food during the time of the meeting. That's the support we have, I guess, is similar. We ask you to Doug to make this comparing the GAC support, the ALAC support with the others. So that's why I have this idea. And Kevin gave us more detail on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Founder. Real quickly, travel support, I guess, is a general offer that is available. I know that, in particular, the ASO receives no travel support from ICANN because it doesn't want it. In the queue, I have UK followed by Jean-Jacques and then Sri Lanka, so UK.
Thank you, Ray, and thank you, Heather, for your co-chairing here this morning. Just a couple of points. We're talking about comparisons with other organizations, and I don't know whether Suzanne had in mind whether the GAC in some way was not realizing its potential in this area, but I think the point I would make on this is that I'm not aware that there is a cap on the resource available for facilitating travel, and our view is that there shouldn't be. I mean, as many applications that can be approved should be approved. So that's first point on that. Yanis, in his opening, talked about remote participation, and certainly that is improving, and we're witnessing that now. But I don't think that is a factor that we should take into account as to whether this facility should be narrowed or changed in any way. I think, as the Philippines pointed out, I think the face-to-face interaction and networking that results from being able to attend and join so many GAC representatives is a precious thing that we should maximize as much as possible with as many countries as possible to ensure that we do get all as many perspectives, especially from developing countries, as we can. So we certainly want to see this facility continue without any cap or fundamental change in its objective. Thanks.
Thank you. Jean-Jacques?
Thank you, Ray. A few quick points. First of all, I want to make clear that I'm speaking in a private capacity. I am a member of the board, but I'm not purporting to speak on behalf of the board on this particular point. Second, as we see, the cost of travel is borne, in this case, by the GAC budget for those countries which have difficulties in providing that that expenditure. So, of course, it depends very much on the current capacity of ICANN, in other words, the size and allocation of its budget. I don't know what it will look like in 2011 and beyond, but I suppose we do have to take that into account in any case. Another point is the order of magnitude. I find it quite striking to see that the difference between the World Bank list and the costing of that and the United Nations list and the costing of that, there's not a huge difference, actually. If you look at the paper which was provided to us by the GAC, the World Bank estimate runs at $590,000, and the UN list runs at $672,000. So there is a difference, right? But at least it's not a different order of magnitude. So I wonder if you could discuss this among yourselves and see if there's a huge difference between one or the other list, and if, as a matter of principle, one should not take the more inclusive list simply as a matter of fairness. My final remark is that I do see some link between this discussion on travel support and another item about support for GAC activity, which is the GAC Secretariat. At the time when you will be discussing whether you want a completely independent, and if you can afford a completely independent secretariat, or a secretariat provided entirely by ICANN, or any combination of those, I think it's worthwhile also looking at the possibility of gradually providing, to a certain extent at least, some independence of or independent source of support for this. My idea is actually, would it make sense creating some sort of fund which could be developed with volunteer member states putting something into a fund, but also international organizations, etc., and maybe also ICANN as such. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. Sri Lanka?
Yeah, thank you. I also support this continuous travel support mechanism that has helped to enhance our participation. Sri Lanka has been a beneficiary of this process, and it will be useful to see whether this can be expanded to more than just six members to enhance greater participation from developing countries. From my personal experience, it has helped to relieve our budget commitments, because in our countries we don't have that much of a budget to attend a particular number of meetings. And there have been some of us who have been taking part support. So, for example, some have only asked for their travel support, some have only asked for accommodation support. That way we have allowed there to be a saving. My question is whether that saving can be carried forward to next year. If it is possible, it would be useful to see whether support for one particular country can be extended beyond three times. Thank you.
Thank you. That's an interesting observation. A lot of that, though, has to do with the mechanisms of the budget process. And so, and the other thing that was of interest here is Jean-Jacques' raising of the point of perhaps creating a what amounts to an endowment pool where governments also contribute to help fund this activity. So that's something else I think is worthwhile looking at. Next on the list I have Kateem.
Thanks, Ray, and good morning, everybody. I'd like to add my support to this wonderful initiative, because I think, speaking for myself as not only an ICANN board member, but as particularly as somebody from from Africa, a developing country for that matter, the participation and active participation of a lot of these developing countries in ICANN processes is going to be heavily dependent on to what extent that they can get support, including specifically travel support, to actually be able to participate in these meetings and activities of ICANN. Having said that, I'd like to, in the interest of making sure that we get the most bang, as the Americans would say, for our buck, in other words, getting the most efficient way of the use of resources for travel support, I'd like to suggest we take a look at page 4 of the document, specifically item number 6 on other provisions, where it lists with A, starting with A, that the requirement that the GAC members that benefit from travel support will be actively participating in the meetings that they go to attend. And secondly, that they'll be expected to complete a feedback form based, you know, I guess, to report on their, and to be submitted to the ICANN for quality of GAC travel support. In other words, the feedback form really is meant to assess the quality of the travel support. What I'd like to suggest is that, you know, the feedback form also include requirements for the participants to report on what exactly it was that they themselves engaged in the meetings. In other words, for us to be able to read the feedback form and be able to say actually what it was that this person did. Because usually, my experience has been there have been instances where some donor agencies who support people to travel to international conferences and things like that actually specifically require them to write reports on what transpired at those meetings. I'm not sure we want to go that far, but I think at least it also helps, since we're having a feedback form to be completed by the participants, to have the feedback form include space for them to provide information about how it was that they actually participated in the meetings that they were supported to attend, as is expected, as it was, as they were expected to participate in. Because I think basically at the end of the day, we need to have some way also of ensuring that the people that we are supporting to participate in these various activities actually actively participate as they were expected to in these meetings. And on that note, I have to say I have to leave very shortly because I have another conflict with another meeting. So, again, thanks very much. I've enjoyed the meeting. Thanks.
I have Yanis on the queue.
Thank you. I would like to react simply what Katim just said. What you described is used in the fellowship program, the feedback form. And to be fair, one should also mention that a number of government representatives benefit from support through the fellowship program. But the fellowship program has one aim. It is to familiarize people with ICANN and make them learn about ICANN activities. That is a form of outreach. The travel support for the GAC members is not really does not really pursue this. This goal, because this program is set to support GAC members who otherwise cannot participate, and I don't think that the feedback form you mentioned is appropriate for the GAC members, because then that puts them in slightly different position than other GAC members. Who do not benefit from travel support, and we see their activities in the room, and that is obvious, and therefore I would say that this idea is, in my view, is not good for travel support program. For fellowship program, that's different because there are different presentations made. From about ICANN's activities. People come in. Myself, I'm going to tell about the GAC to the fellows. And that is important for ICANN staff to evaluate how this program is going, what's the perception of fellows themselves, whether they feel it useful or not, in order to change it and to improve it for the next time. But in travel support, that's a different story.
Kateem?
Thanks, Janice. Then I take it then that you are suggesting effectively that item B on the item number 6, other provisions, be struck out then, because there is specifically a mention there of the feedback form.
That's the current document. I believe I have Egypt in the queue. Egypt, did you want to speak? Rashida?
Yes, thank you, Ray. I noticed that we have a maximum of 6 GAC members for each ICANN meeting. So is there a certain criteria to choose if we receive like 10 applications, for example? Because I can see criteria for eligibility, I mean, but still it can be applicable on like 10 members. So how we make the choice?
Thank you. First of all, let me remind everyone that this document that we're looking at is the one that was developed to support the FY 2010 budget. And so we're discussing the aspects of this as far as going forward. But in answer to your question as far as what criteria is used to select persons, I don't know that since I'm not one of them. I don't know, Giannis, if you wanted to briefly talk about that or what the methodology is that's used, or it's up to you.
You know, again, it depends from the number of applications, and certainly we're trying to look in all balances we know about, geographic, gender, and so on. So in the case when number of applications correspond to number of available support packages, then it's easy. So then there are no criteria, it's a match. When it is bigger, there was one case of being bigger, then of course we were trying to apply those principles I mentioned, geographic representation and gender, to make sure that that our judgment is well perceived by GAC members.
Is that a hand up? Sure, go ahead, UK.
Thanks. I talked about our preference for there being no cap on the number. I mean, can I ask how the number 6 was arrived at? I mean, shouldn't the eligibility criteria be the key thing here in terms of numbers of applications that can be approved? I'm sorry if I missed an explanation earlier about how this number 6 came about. Thanks.
I didn't participate in it, and Giannis did, but I would strongly suspect that it's a budget number. In other words, looking at the budget, what can be worked into the budget. Certainly, in principle, not having a cap is a good idea, but I think the realities of the budget may at some point in time have to be considered. But we'll have to decide amongst ourselves as we go forward with this recommendation whether or not we make a flat recommendation of no cap, or if we decide we're going to live with one, then kind of like set what the cap is that we think that we could that the GAC could live with. So it's a valid principle to discuss, but I think we also at some point in time have got to bring in the realities of the budget and the revenues available to support it, because the budget is supporting not only the GAC but many other groups.
Thanks.
Excuse me, this is Suzanne. Could I join the queue?
Yes, you may, Suzanne. UK, go ahead.
Thank you. And I wanted to pick up on Vonda's overview. Thank you for that, Vonda. And if I understand, are there regional ALAC organizations in all of the 5 regions? And if so, would that suggest that there were 2 per region that were funded, so that would be a number of 10? I'm just trying to get clarity as to you know, the GAC support, which is currently 6, relative to support provided to other bodies.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's 5 regions, 2 persons by region, plus the plus the non-COM members.
Go ahead, UK.
Thanks. Sorry, just to come back in on this. I think for the purposes of this document, that is an issue that, Ray, you highlighted very ably for us, that the issue of caps is something we need to look at. There may be others who strongly feel the same as I do, that a cap of 6 may not be appropriate as the GAC continues to enlarge and we reach out to more countries that are not currently members. I also would hope that we can preserve the very effective mechanics of this travel support scheme. It doesn't involve a huge amount of work or bureaucracy. I think if we were to go down the route of creating a fund, as was suggested earlier, and relying on country donations and so on, that would create a huge project for governments. It would involve budget bidding and all kinds of treasury implications for countries if the fund were to rely on donations in that way. And the administration of the fund and so on, and the auditing of it, we will be contemplating a major new and resource-intensive approach to this. So if we can preserve the way it operates now so effectively and with such limited resourcing, that would be a preference I would support. Thanks.
Thank you. Egypt, and that will then be, I think, the last person that will address this matter. Go ahead.
Thank you, Ray. Again, on the cap thing, and based on what Sri Lanka mentioned regarding that some members sometimes ask for just only accommodation, only ticket, I mean, not the full thing. So are we supposed to stay beyond below a certain figure? I mean, if some members ask only for half the fund, does this give more room to other members? I mean, can we go beyond the 6, for example, to 8, if this stays within the budget?
I'll say one more time about what I repeat what I said about the caps. The caps that exist in this particular document were done for this particular fiscal year. And so, in my opinion, the whole matter and subject of caps is an open discussion. My personal preference would be that there would be no caps. But my realistic view of the world also says that there may have to be some sort of a cap because of the reality of the budget. And so I think that's what we have to discuss in that. And so this number 6 that's there was only produced for this particular fiscal year. And so that's not a hard and fast figure at the present time. And as been pointed out very briefly, the ALAC has more because they have 10 plus their NOMCOM people. And I will take it as an action from the board perspective to go back and get the data as far as the travel support by numbers of individuals by organizations, SOs and ACs, and provide that back to this group. And we can use that as to further evaluate. I think in the end, at least you want it to be fair. And the aspect of travel support for the GAC in a lot of regards is different than that of any of the other SOs and ACs because of the nature of the GAC and what it does. And so I think that also would fit into any discussion of a cap. Did you have something to come back at me with?
Yes, I was just asking, in principle, the cap, should there be a cap? The cap should be a certain figure and not a certain number of members. I mean, because maybe we have like 10 members, they are all coming from nearby countries. So, I mean, we should... If there is a cap,
right,
we should be within a certain budget,
right,
and not a fixed figure of...
I think as we go forward, we have to bring all these factors into the discussion of what we really mean by a cap in this regard. And so it's much more complicated than just drawing a line. So let's do that. Okay, I would then like to close out this subject. Although we don't have a person that has volunteered to hold the pen for this thing yet, and so I will briefly ask if someone would be willing to do that. Personally, I think that it would be better. We would be better served if it was a person from a least developed country to do that, since they would be the beneficiaries of this more than anything else. But if there's anyone that's willing to do that right now, please raise your hand. Otherwise, we'll just move on. You want to describe the function of the pen? Heather will tell you how to use your pen.
Well, we could continue in the manner we have thus far, where a volunteer has drafted a text for the report for consideration. So I think ahead of what we will likely do is have a teleconference. If not one, then two before the June meeting. So it would mean taking the comments that are made today. You can draw on the previous document that the GAC has prepared, and then maybe propose an approach, propose recommendations, or ask questions if there are things that we haven't really got to the bottom of, but that we need to in order to come out with recommendations on this topic. So is that agreeable, Jayantha? Great. Thank you. Okay, since I have the microphone already, I'd like to propose that we take a break here, 15 minutes. It's quite warm in the room, so it might be good for us to get a bit of air and stretch our legs. When we come back, we will talk about the Secretariat, and then we will talk about the first and sixth objective, which relates to GAC policy advice given to the board, and also the policy development process, and how the GAC would perhaps be better served inputting to other parts of the community, and so on and so forth, to improve the policy development process. On those last on that last agenda item during the break, if you could be thinking about ways that we can focus our efforts in order to consider those issues and come out with recommendations. Both those topics are potentially quite broad, in particular looking at analyzing advice that the GAC has given to the board. So what I'm really seeking today is thoughts on how we can make that manageable and what we might want to look at as maybe cases or examples that will inform our discussions further. So. Thank you. I assume that's agreeable. Okay. All right. So we will see you in 15 minutes.